שלום, אנחנו לומדים בכתבי רבש, כרך א',
we are reading from the writings of Rabash, essays, article 11, a real prayer is over a real deficiency, page 455. The lesson materials can be downloaded on our website, kab.tv, and the lesson can be watched there as well. And questions may be asked during the lesson.
I was looking at the title of it. I would say the following. A true deficiency. A real deficiency. When can we feel it? It says, wherever a person is, where his thoughts are, that's where he is. So we need to begin by testing, where am I? By trying to restrict myself, to attach myself to the Creator. To restrict my desire, to attach myself as a point to the Creator, and then to start feeling the states that are going through me, so that in each and every state that I'm going through, I again reattach myself to the Creator. And that way, I begin to build my spiritual parzuf. That the Creator, from that point of restriction that I created, even if I don't quite know how to do it, and it's not spirituality yet, however, I try, like a child who is trying to be a grown-up. That way, I begin to detect the disturbances that the Creator is sending me, so in all kinds of different directions that preoccupy me, scare me, confuse me in my mind and heart. And each time I bring myself back to the point of adhesion. You don't need more. And by that, my spiritual territory is built. If over all of the disturbances I annul myself and I'm again attached to the Creator, then that disturbance in mind or heart, it enters sanctity already. I corrected it already. And therefore, I am always with a real deficiency and a real prayer. When I always want to come back to dvekut, adhesion, and I discover that I'm not capable of it, but rather only with the help of the Creator. So I'm always trying to detect the disturbances and making an effort to ask for adhesion. That's all. That is, my point of adhesion, the first one, should always be for me as the true point that I do not exist. I'm only attached in adhesion. Then I will learn from the Creator according to the manner of the disturbances that He awakens in me, according to the intensity of the disturbances, according to the connections between them. I will learn what is called from your actions, we know you. From His actions over me, from that I begin to detect His attitude, His character, His behavior, what is He trying to tell me? And this is actually called the wisdom of Kabbalah. Well, that's what I said. Let's see what Rabash writes for us.
The writings of Rabash, page 455, article 11, a real prayer is over a real deficiency. The writing says, these are the names of the sons of Israel who came to Egypt, and a new king arose over Egypt who did not know Yosef. And the Egyptians compelled the sons of Israel to labor rigorously. And it came to pass that the sons of Israel sighed because of the work, and they cried out, and their cry, because of the work, went up to God. And God heard their groaning.
So, again, we interpret everything in a spiritual manner. Spiritual means that we have to connect. And then, when we truly want to connect, we feel disturbances, very great disturbances. As it says, then when they want to connect and the new king arose over Egypt, meaning this narrow place, who did not know Joseph. He does not acknowledge that there is some desire to connect, and the Egyptians compelled the children of Israel to labor rigorously. So the group feels that their ego, the ego of each and every one of them, is going wild. And the children of Israel sighed because of this work, trying to connect over all of their egoistic desires, and they cried out. Nevertheless, they recognized that there is no choice but to cry out, and their cry rose to God, and there he heard. That's the process. Actually, in these lines, we have the whole work of Egypt. Next.
We should understand why it is written, and their cry because of the work went up to God. Did they not have greater torments in Egypt? Here it seems that their cry, meaning their torments, were only from the work. It is also written, and God heard their groaning, meaning that hearing the prayer was over their groaning, which is only about the work. We shall interpret this according to our way. It is known that before a person begins to work in order to bestow, but for reasons that are written in the Holy Zohar, that there are two reasons for engaging in Torah and mitzvot and commandments. One, to have the pleasures of this world. If he does not observe the Torah and commandments, he is afraid that the Creator will punish him. Two, to have the pleasures of the next world. His fear that he may not be given causes him to observe the Torah and commandments. When the reason that compels him to observe the Torah and mitzvot is his own benefit, the body does not resist so much, because to the extent that he believes in reward and punishment, he can work and feel that each day he is adding more. And this is the truth, that each day of performing mitzvot and engaging in Torah joins the day before. And so he adds to his possessions of keeping Torah and mitzvot.
If he does it either due to punishment or due to reward, because of his ego, then each day he keeps adding.
The reason is that his intention is primarily the reward, and he is not thinking about the intention, meaning that his aim will be to bestow. Rather, he believes in reward and punishment, and that he will be rewarded for what he is doing. Therefore, his aim is only to perform proper actions in every detail. Otherwise, if the actions are improper, it is certain that his work will not be accepted so as to reward him for them. When he sees that the work he is doing is fine, he has nothing more to worry about. For this reason, his concern is only with the quantity, meaning that he should try to do more good deeds. If he is a wise disciple, then he knows that he should delve deeper into his learning and be more meticulous in the mitzvot he is performing, to keep them according to the law, according to everyone's view. He always tries to be rigorous with judgments that are usually treated more lightly, while he tries to be more rigorous, but he has no other worries.
So this is the ordinary form of keeping the Torah mitzvot. This is clear, right? What?
He's not talking about what we call customs, Torah and mitzvot, as I heard previously, is the correction with the help of the reforming light.
He is talking about people. Maybe you should read it again. He is talking about people who keep the Torah and mitzvot due to punishment, fear of punishment, and fear of losing something. Either that they might receive punishments, or they will not receive a good payment. That's what he's talking about. So a person who has such relations to the Torah and mitzvot is concerned about having as many mitzvot as possible and as many pages that he studied as possible.
Meaning, he's not talking about someone who studies.
What do you mean, someone who studies?
Us, for example.
I don't know if it's about us or not about us. You can study anything. It's not important what you're studying. You have a certain attitude to what is called Torah and Mitzvot. You can study all the books that are called Torah, right? These are holy books. Then, why are they called holy? They were written by people who were in sanctity while they were writing them, meaning in bestowal, in the attainment of godliness, in love of brothers, love of Israel, whatever you want to call it, but in bestowal. Those who write due to the attainment of godliness, meaning due to the attainment of the quality of the good that does good, to do good to everyone, love your friends as yourself, one who writes from that quality, what he's writing about is called holiness, the quality of bestowal, the quality of bina. Now, one who takes this book that was written in this way, it's not necessarily that he has nice good intentions, who knows which ones, because they were all created as beasts, and man's inclination is evil from birth. We all begin from the negative calculation. So, what is the goal? So a person always begins from wanting a reward, or at least not to receive some punishment. He thinks it will be good for him because the Torah is a virtue against all kinds of problems, maybe the next world. And this is why he's studying. So he's studying for his own benefit, either in this world, in the next world, either because of fear to receive some punishment or from the desire to receive some reward. That's it. When one is studying in this way, what is important for him is the number of mitzvot that he's performing and the number of sources that he read, that he went through. And that's it. Yes?
My question is regarding the definition of quantity of mitzvot, of commandments.
What it says?
With your permission, I'll be a bit more precise.
And with your permission, I'm going to stop here.
Ken Gershon.
Yes, Gershon. I'll tell you why. It's not too wise to speak about everything openly. The question is, does it help the correction or not? There are people who are in the middle of the way, in the beginning of the way, or not even on the way, and for them, it could actually hurt them. Do not place an obstacle before a blind one. You see, every year, as the child grows, you give him more food that is more complex. So it's not milk, but porridge, not porridge, but already something solid, etc. And that's how it is here. There's nothing you can do about it. Later, read it again and you will see how he does it. I try to be with him. And we have to realize that to just disclose each and everything, that's called unripe, meaning that a person might eat something which is not ripe enough for him, and it could cause him harm. He will not understand it correctly. It follows.
It follows that such people whose reason for observing Torah and Mitzvot and assuming the burden of the kingdom of heaven is to be rewarded in this world and in the next world do not need the Creator to have the strength to engage in Torah and Mitzvot, since to the extent of their faith in reward and punishment, the body allows them to keep each according to his degree. This is not so with people who want to do the holy work in order to bestow without any reward and want to observe Torah and Mitzvot because of the greatness of the Creator. And it is a great privilege for them to be allowed to serve the King. As it is written in the above-mentioned Holy Zohar, fear, which is the first, is that one should fear one's master because he is great and ruling, the essence and the root. He interprets there in the Sulam that there are three manners to the fear of the Creator. One, fear of punishments in this world. Two, fearing punishments of hell as well. Those two are not real fear, because he is not keeping the fear because of the commandment of the Creator, but for his own sake. It follows that his personal profit is the root and the fear is the branch, and results from his own benefit. But fear that is the essence, the first, is that he will fear the Creator because he is great and rules over everything. It follows that the greatness of the Creator is the reason that compels him to observe Torah and Mitzvot, and this is regarded as his desire being only to bestow upon the Creator, called bestowing contentment upon his Maker, and not for his own benefit.
The greatness of the Creator is that simply in whatever situation that comes to me, I first of all think about Him. That's called the greatness of the Creator. Simply, this is how it is. Whatever happens, whatever troubles and problems and disturbances that might come to me, first of all, I think about Him. Not even about my adhesion with Him, but rather about Him. By that, I give contentment.
Here begins the exile, meaning that he is not permitted to aim his work to be in order not to receive reward, because it is against nature. And although one can force oneself, although the body disagrees, just as one can practice abstention, although it is against nature, but this pertains to actions. That is, to do things against the body's will, he can go above reason, called against the body's will. However, he cannot go against his feeling and intellect, meaning to say that he feels otherwise than he does. For example, if a person is cold or hot, he cannot say that his feeling is untrue and force himself to say that he understands otherwise than what his mind does, or that he feels otherwise than what he's feeling. His only option is to say what he sees. It follows that when one wants to keep the Torah and mitzvot in order to bestow upon the Creator, it is the nature of the body not to move at all unless it sees that it will have some reward. Thus, he has no way to work for the Creator and not for his own benefit. Here begins the exile, meaning the torments that, as much as he works, he sees no progress. For example, if he's 20 years old, he can say that he has acquired possessions of 20 years of engagement in Torah and Mitzvot. On the other hand, he can say that he has been keeping the Torah and Mitzvot for 20 years, but has not achieved the ability to do anything in order to bestow. Rather, everything is built on the basis of self-love. It follows that all the torments and pains he suffers are because he cannot work for the Creator. He wants to work in order to bestow, but the body is enslaved to the klipot, to the shells, and does not let him have this aim.
Or he cares about himself. Why have I not reached bestowal yet? I. Not that I will not be able to bestow to the Creator, rather I did not reach it. And the test is, if you can help others to reach it, then it is called that it is truly in order to bestow.
At that time, he cries out to the Creator to help him, because he sees that he is in exile among the klipot. They govern him, and he sees no way that he will be able to emerge from their control. It follows that at that time, his prayer is regarded as a real prayer, because he cannot come out of this exile. As it is written, "And he brought Israel out from their midst for his mercies forever." Since this is against nature, only the Creator can deliver Israel from this exile. But since it is known that there is no light without a kli, without a vessel, meaning that there is no filling without a lack, and the lack is the kli that receives the filling, for this reason, before one enters exile, meaning if he does not see that he cannot deliver himself from the exile by himself, it cannot be said that he should be brought out. This is so because although he cries, "Get me out of the state I am in," it is not a real prayer. Because how does he know that he cannot come out by himself? Rather, this can be said precisely when he feels the exile, meaning that he will pray from the bottom of the heart. There are two conditions for praying from the bottom of the heart. One, his work must be against nature. That is, he wants to do everything only in order to bestow and wants to exit self-love. At that time, it can be said that he has a lack. Two, he begins to exit self-love by himself and exerts in it, but cannot move an inch from his state. At that time, he becomes needy of the Creator's help, and his prayer is real, because he sees that he cannot do anything by himself. Then, when he cries out to the Creator to help him, he knows this from the work, as it is written, and the sons of Israel sighed because of the work. This means that by working and wanting to achieve the degree of being able to bestow upon the Creator, they saw that they could not emerge from their nature. So, they prayed from the bottom of the heart. By this we will understand what we asked about the verse, and their cry because of the work went up to God. This means that the worst torments, over which all their crying out was, only over the work. It was only over the work, and not over other things. Rather, it means that they were crying out over their situation, that they could not emerge from self-love and work for the Creator. This was their exile, which tormented them, that they saw that they were under their control. It follows that in the exile in Egypt they obtained kelim, meaning a desire that the Creator will help them emerge from the exile. As we said above, that there is no light without a kli. For only when we pray a real prayer, when one sees that he cannot be saved, and only the Creator can help him, this is considered a real prayer.
So, how many forms of exile do we go through? Please count them. Go ahead. A workshop. What forms of exile are we in on the path? Questions? Yes.
I have two questions. The first relates to what you described, where a person is where his thoughts are.
It's not what I say, that's what it's written.
Yes, I wanted to ask. You said that over the thoughts, the anxieties that one sees, he needs to adhere to the Creator, first of all.
No, first he has to attach himself to the Creator, and then he can start feeling all of the disturbances, so that through them he will attach to the Creator even more.
So I wanted to ask...
Everything begins from the restriction, tzimtzum.
Right. So according to what I've heard, you described that the restriction is above everything, one adheres to the Creator.
Yes, in a point.
What does it mean to do this correctly, to adhere to the Creator? Because
there's none else besides Him. That's it. Without interpreting, without relating to what I have now in my life, the Creator on His own.
Is it possible to describe a situation for a moment? A person has fears and anxieties, and now he remembers that he has to attach himself to the Creator.
Yes.
What does he do?
He lets go of all of the disturbances, all of these fears, anxieties, and everything, and he attaches, clings to, there is none else besides him, so that it's clear that this is the only thing that exists. Yes.
All right, so usually what motivates a person to move in that direction, what supplies him the fuel, is some distress he's in, at least in the first stages of the work. And the Rabash writes here that the work, he writes that the sensation of exile, if one's work is against nature, meaning he wants to do everything only in order to bestow, he wants to emerge from self-love, and then it can be said that he has a true lack, and then ultimately he comes to the sensation of the exile.
Mm-hmm.
So we see that usually the address to the Creator comes from distress.
That's egoistic. It's not exile yet.
Right, so how do you come out of this cycle?
We need to work on what we talked about, that I accept the Creator as the only single essence that exists, and I am in Him in a single point, as we learn that it was in the beginning of creation, before the created beings were created and the emanated beings were emanated, the upper light was filling up the whole of reality. And then in that upper light, a point was created, a black point, different than the light, which has the will to receive. And that point entirely annuls before the light. This is how I want to be. And later on, by achieving adhesion in a single point, meaning everything that happens, it's all the Creator, I can already begin to open up in me my mind and my heart, my feelings and thoughts, to the extent that I ascribe them as well only to the Creator. So I have nothing on me. I remain just as a point. And whatever I feel does not belong to me. It is the Creator who is doing it to me so that I will cling to Him even more. So then my point of adhesion begins to expand over these disturbances. And in the area, in a greater and greater area, I am attached to Him, in adhesion with Him over all of these disturbances. So now I no longer see these disturbances as disturbances. I see in them help, really. This is called help made against Him. Against. But it helps me to be in greater adhesion. And this way I try to be in increasing adhesion. And with that, I feel myself as being in exile, more or less, that I'm capable or incapable. Here there are several things. There is a time when I'm not capable of ascribing these things to the Creator, even though I realize that this is what I need to do, but I'm not able to do it. When the fears and disturbances come, all kinds of obstacles, I am not able to hold myself in adhesion with the Creator. And the sign for adhesion is joy, happiness, that there is none else besides Him. He's good and does good. I'm in adhesion with Him. And anyone who is in adhesion with the whole is whole. I don't have that. This is considered that I am in exile, outside of the adhesion, and there is none else besides Him. What are you looking at me for?
I want to hear something.
I'm sorry, so I'm just saying nonsense. Or
no, I feel I'm missing out on something.
Okay, well, it will come. It will come. But that point that I told you from which we begin the adhesion, I recommend to try that, to relate this way. All right? Yes?
You touched upon the matter of the klipa, of how it is I'm not in bestowal and yet to assist others. What does it mean to assist?
To assist others.
Yes, what does it mean to assist others to achieve prayer?
To assist others means that I, by myself, if I relate to the Creator, I relate to Him with my ego, even if I will do all kinds of actions, I can go through hoops in the air, it will not help. If I relate to the Creator directly, I'm an egoist and I will only relate to Him egoistically. As much as I will try to be clean, it's not going to help. I have a possibility to relate to the Creator in a way which is above my ego, only if I pass it through the friend. Because I am in contrast to the friend. So here, if I take his desire, is higher than my desire, so that I want to serve Him, and I do it in order to bring contentment to the Creator, not to me, not to the friend, but to the Creator, then my work against my desire for the friend becomes bestowed to the Creator. This is how I relate to Him, to the Creator.
What desire of a friend should I take in that manner?
It doesn't matter that he's lacking a pillow or a chair.
I didn't get it.
It doesn't matter which desire. Some normal corporeal desire. The corporeality of the friend is your spirituality.
Corporeality there's need and there's benefits. And
whatever the friend wants, usually ordinary things, legitimate things. So if I take them so that through them I bring contentment to the Creator, then I'm performing an act of bestowal, because I have no feeling of love towards the friend or towards the Creator. But towards the Creator, I always have this attitude that I'm going to gain from it. And if it's through the friend, it's not going to be that way. I pay.
So, as an example, there are desires of friends who want to perform some actions in service of the other friends, and then I take that desire and work with it. I take this desire, which is for the benefit of the collective. And there are other desires, help me, I don't feel like moving myself.
So
this self-benefit, where this laziness is presented to me, and
maybe they're playing with you this way, acting. Yeah, so what? Are you going to judge him? Or do you use him in order to bring contentment to the Creator?
The moment I'm being presented with this laziness, it's already like a kind of trial, but
I don't know. Why don't you interpret it that the Creator is giving you an opportunity to bestow this way? What do you care how it's done? Of course it is the Creator doing it. Of course the Creator is between you, and He is acting, playing with these things in order to give each and every one an opportunity to advance.
Perhaps I'm perceiving it incorrectly.
Okay, so learn from that. Anyone else? Yes.
Daniel from Beersheba asks, what should I do if I don't agree with the Creator in regards to the thoughts and emotions He sends me?
Sorry, but there is no higher place where you can complain about the Creator. There is none. What can you do? There is none, that's it. So that you disagree with Him, you don't agree. Okay. That you don't want it, fine. Well, what can you do? Do a good calculation regarding everything that you're going through and arrange things correctly, and you will realize that it's all arranged in an ideal manner, really. In the best, most correct manner, and it's all for you. So that if you won't have an ego, you won't be able to correct it later. If you won't be able to correct it, you won't be able to feel the oppositeness between you and the Creator. And specifically in that oppositeness, you attain Him and His state and His greatness and everything, and you become like Him. It is all, well, at first it's unclear why everything is happening, what for. Later on, gradually, we see that it all comes from the wholeness of creation. So to begin with, we need to take that as a whole, and just to learn, and not to be against it, because being against it is not going to help. So don't fight it. Rather, let me arrange myself in this way, the way that Kabbalists recommend to me, and then I will understand what is going on. And we always approach it from below upwards. First we have to study, then we attain it, then we understand it. That's how it is. So So there is no choice. First, you have to subjugate yourself and keep it, and then discover, feel, and then understand. That's the way. And to be... relate to it with mindfulness, to just, you know, trying to pull on some muscles, it's not going to help. Yes, Dani.
He says here that perhaps you answered, but I didn't understand. There are two conditions for a true prayer. One, that it is against your desire, and the second is where he describes that he can't do it, and then he cries to the Creator to help him. It sounds like I'm completely alone with the Creator, there's no one else, it's completely egoistic.
Why? It's always I who turn to him, I'm one who cries out. The fact that I prepared my deficiency through others, that's true. But I'm the one who is crying out, not somebody else in my stead.
According to what I feel from these words, in that cry, there is a disappointment from the connection, I don't succeed, just take this sorrow from me.
No, not because of the suffering. To the contrary, people who advance, they begin to appreciate the suffering, because the suffering is the measurement of proximity or distance, the manners of proximity or distance. Otherwise, what? We are sentient beings. We are a will to receive. So suffering for us is this whole indication of where I am.
So the cry is about the lack of success in bestowing and thinking of the friends, that kind of assistance.
No, it's always towards the Creator through the friends. Israel, the Creator, and the Light are one. Don't forget that.
But regarding the lack of success in bestowing contentment.
Yes, Tzvika.
I'm trying to think, you know, what is exile? What is exile?
Exile, that I want to love, but I'm not able to. And I suffer because I'm not capable of loving. That's called exile for me. Exile from love, exile from bestowal, exile from connection. That's called exile. And I'm in it. I'm in the group, I'm in the study, I'm in everything. But I cannot keep it. That's called the exile. Who is stopping me? My Pharaoh, my ego, is not giving me the possibility to carry out actions of bestowal.
The exile is some level in the study, meaning you need to reach the exile. Or
exile is a very high degree.
Right, so how can you achieve that exile? Come to it, that's the question. You spend money, you work on it, so you do these workshops here, you're fine, but...
So you make money and you work in your office or whatever, but you don't think that this is not exile?
You know, people feel that
in your daily work throughout the day, don't you feel that you're just being wasted, you're working for no reason? Someone made up all of these occupations, and you're just burning life with that. So, okay, you have to keep doing it, but with the intention that I, at the same time, am in adhesion with the Creator. We have our root between us, we have connection, we receive this daily portion in the morning, and this way I'm going to hold on the entire day. That I'm annulling. I constantly want to annul towards the Creator, and specifically on top of the work and all of the problems, and all of this is called the imaginary world. It's in order to give me the possibility to be an even greater adhesion. And if I reach adhesion, I don't feel this world. It disappears. It becomes from the whatever separates to what links us. Instead of the hiding masach, the revealing masach.
I'm talking about the routine of life. You know, you have a certain road.
No. That's the arvut. If there is the force of arvut, then you are not in this routine. To the contrary, you accept it as help each and every moment. Don't say that there are any hindrances.
The friends need to show me that I'm in exile, or do I discover it myself in life?
The friends should also show you that.
In what way? How should he show me that I'm in exile, the group?
Well, to call you throughout the day, right? And say, Zvika, how are you doing? How's your exile?
Come on, I'm busy with a business meeting now.
What meeting? An assembly of friends?
No, we're all busy. You know, a friend opened a certain subject. You closed him down. Yeah, we don't want to talk about sensitive things, but we in life, you know, it's as if it's a privilege to come to the exile.
Of course it's a privilege. What do you mean? What's the exile? The feeling that you are detached from the Creator, a true feeling, which is revelation of the gap between you and Him. What can be... it's a great place. What do you mean? It's the Creator in His posterior, called Pharaoh. He's establishing this state for you.
I'm uncomfortable with that. I mean, a person in exile isn't comfortable with being in exile.
That's true. This is why when you discover the exile, when you feel that this is the exile, you can't stand it, and it helps you to rise above it, to run away.
So what do I do, essentially? What is my work? Let's say I've come to exile, and you say...
You turn the exile to redemption.
How?
You just describe it to the Creator. That's enough. What does it say? What is the difference between Egypt and the land of Israel?
I don't know.
It's the same desire that you discovered in Egypt. However, it is in order to bestow through the desert. Then you reach the land of Israel. But it is the same desire. This is why every day one has to see himself as coming out of Egypt.
So, let me understand. I, in my work here, need to try to discover, reveal the exile, or to come out of the exile. What am I doing here now?
Oh, okay. That's a nice question. Every day you need to try to reach adhesion. And each day you will discover that you are in exile from that. Yes? Then you will have work, daily work, a daily portion for how to attach yourself to the Creator on top of the distance. And then the evil inclination will be as the good inclination, the angel of death as the angel of life. That's how it is. Nothing was created for any other reason except for the sake of the goal.
What are the actions which I know? I want to be a little more practical.
I said it in the beginning of the lesson.
What?
We try to find the point of adhesion with the Creator only as a point. There are no disturbances, there's nothing. How do I imagine myself in adhesion? And now, with all of the problems that are revealed, to be in the same point of adhesion. So it won't be a point anymore. It already have some area. The disturbance, the desires that were in this disturbance are no longer in this disturbance. They actually increase that point of adhesion with the Creator. You multiplied, you doubled your adhesion.
So, exile, what is it? Self-love? He writes self-love here or something. Is that exile?
No. Exile, no. The exile is the inability to be in adhesion with the Creator. Okay. Yes.
So in order to adhere to the Creator, one needs to restrict himself and above all hindrances to attach himself to the Creator or through
yes.
all these...
No, not through. There are no disturbances. I need to pick the state above all the disturbances. I don't want to be influenced by the disturbances. I have to attach myself to the Creator in a point and then... I allow these disturbances to appear in me in order to strengthen my connection with the Creator, because there is none else besides Him. The disturbances come from Him. Through all of these puppets, He's sending me these disturbances, right? And this is how I need to accept it.
So, to begin with, let's say a person who lives throughout the day, everything that happens to him throughout the day, restricts everything just to attach to there's none else besides him.
Yes.
And where does the next stage begin, where I allow I attach to the Creator through the hindrances, through the disturbances?
What do you mean you allow him?
What you said right now, I didn't understand the word. That through the disturbance...
Well, first of all, I find the point of connection with the Creator, the point of adhesion, like Uba, an embryo. And then I try to open up the disturbances only to the extent that they help me for greater adhesion. Then it's called that my Uba, my embryo is growing, my drop of semen begins to grow to an Uba.
So this state, how does it occur?
It happens just like I said. I have nothing else to add, really. The point of adhesion, and then, but you take it into your own hands. It's not that you go crazy and you're in these emotions that throw you from one end to the other. No. That also happens in order to teach you how much you need the help of the Creator, etc. But the state should be like that, to reach the point of adhesion and bit by bit to open up the disturbances that you had before gradually, as much as I constantly keep the adhesion. And if I see that I don't, then immediately I go back a bit more. No, a bit more. This is how I begin to see what does it mean to be in connection with him through Masach and Oviyut, coarseness.
When one opens up these disturbances, he learns, he understands the Creator's attitude towards him, his behavior.
Okay, we're moving on to 10.